X7A. Number 2A.
Well, we finished just before with that sense of introducing the term idea and ideas. And now I want to go a bit closer into a analysis of those two terms. And as I said before, I just try to present it because I know myself how difficult it is to really get the deeper sense of what idea means and what ideas are. So we start by what we find in the textbook as a definition of idea, which I said is actually not so much a definition because Mrs. Eddy doesn't call it a definition. She just quotes there on page 115 on the scientific translation of Immortal Mind. When she comes to idea, she quotes from Webster that idea is an image in mind, capital M, and as the immediate object of understanding. So we can see, we can start here out and see, idea is that which mind sees. It's really the primeval conception of the divine mind. That's what mind has in mind. That's really the idea. That's the image that mind has about itself. It's the primordial conception of mind's own purpose and aim. And if it is said that it is the immediate object of understanding, then she certainly means that it is not the immediate subject of understanding. So that mind is not, that idea is not that which we hold in our subjective mind and which we subjectively understand. It's a divine objective reality which we have to understand. And therefore we can see that ideas are actually those divinely objective realities, those divinely objective values which exist no matter if we think of them or don't think of them, no matter if we understand them or don't understand them. But naturally, the moment from the human standpoint we begin to think in terms of ideas, then they constitute the immediate object of understanding. Actually, we cannot understand anything else but principle and its idea. There is nothing else to be understood in Christian Science. We can't understand anything else because, as we will see, principle and idea constitute reality. So what on earth shall we understand else than reality? We can't. And therefore, we are not surprised to see, I come now to the next point, the origin of idea, to read that idea come from the synonymous terms. That she says the idea is emanating from infinite mind. They are such simple statements which we have read, I think thousands of times or hundreds of times, and perhaps have nodded inwardly and said, yes, idea emanate from the infinite mind. But have we realized what it means? It means that they don't come from us, that ideas are really the outpouring of mind's infinite conception of itself, and that these ideas are the only realities of being, and therefore they are the only things that are ever going on, and that they are the only things that ever will be fulfilled, and nothing else will be fulfilled. So we can see that everything starts with the synonymous terms, either with infinite mind, from which emanate all ideas, or she says, from spirit emanates the true idea. Whatever it is, it comes from God, and God stands for the seven synonymous terms. And as we go on, we'll see how each one of those seven synonymous terms are the creator of specific characteristics of the idea of God. So that we begin to realize that in order to understand at all what these synonymous terms mean, that we have to understand them through what they create, through the ideas that are brought forth by them. And that is why in recapitulation where the system of Christian Science is being taught, we come to that tremendous statement where she says, reasoning from cause to effect, from cause to effect. That's usually our way of reasoning in the usually old classical scientific period, that we reason from cause to effect. And Josie said, reasoning from cause to effect in the science of mind, capital M. We begin with mind. We never begin anywhere else in reasoning things out. We begin with mind, which must be understood through the idea which expresses it. Now, any other reasoning, therefore, is wrong reasoning of cause and effect. If we go out from the problem and reason from the problem to the right idea, we reason wrongly. If we reason from the problem and say, this problem is the counterfeit of an idea, it's the lie about the truth, therefore we reason from the lie to the truth, is reasoning wrongly. But it's done all over the place in Christian Science practice. You take a problem and then you reason to the idea. You can't. In the science of mind, which is not metaphysics, in the science of mind, we always reason from mind, which must be understood through the idea. And therefore we can see why practice in Christian Science is something which is simplified very much the moment we begin to reason with synonymous terms, because then we are always starting the same way with every case, that we say to every case, I don't know you, and there is no sense of reasoning from your problem to anything that is true. All what we can do is to put it away in a corner and say, let's better forget about it for a while, and turn ourselves directly to the immensity of mind and reason from mind and ask mind what mind knows about the whole thing. And then mind tells us, you know, I don't know anything about that situation. I only know my own ideas. And you begin to reason from mind as ideas, and not from mind to the problem. This is not the science of mind, to reason from mind to the problem. Nor is it the science of mind to reason from the problem to the idea. That's metaphysics, and that's what every metaphysical group does all over the world. They do that, and we can leave that to them. But this is not science. Once we have seen that everything comes from the Infinite One, and from there comes one principle, and not many principles, one principle, therefore we better go out from that one principle. And from that Infinite One principle comes the Infinite Idea, and therefore that Infinite One only is aware of ideas and conceives of ideas and their demonstration, the demonstration of ideas. We demonstrate ideas. So that's the starting point in reasoning rightly from cause to effect. And this naturally is doing away with that false concept that brain could give any idea of God or of men. That finiteness, as she says, cannot present the idea of infinity, that the belief in a physical God and man cannot supply the true idea. The moment we go out from the physical sense and try to reason from the physical to the metaphysical to the idea, we have started on the wrong track. What then is actually going on? And I come to the next point, God and his ideas, and I just want to state what Mrs. Eddy says about God and his ideas, then afterwards about mind and mind's ideas, and afterwards about principle and idea. And this is perhaps today the last time that I quote so often from the books. I know it's tiring for a listener. But sometimes it fulfills a certain purpose, namely that purpose that when one takes a very definite subject and just quotes en masse over and over, that it makes a terrific impression what really the teaching on that subject is. And that's what I want to achieve with these few quotations, which I will shorten as much as I can out of the context, just to bring home that tremendous fact that what Mrs. Eddy had in mind as her discovery was to present nothing else but God and his ideas, and that that constitutes reality and that there is nothing else besides that. And therefore, that if we take her discovery as what it is, that we too would begin to think always within that frame of reference. She says, and here come various quotes just about God and his idea, "Nothing is real and eternal but God and his idea. Do we want anything else but that which is real and eternal? Or do we want that which is real and eternal? When, if yes, then it's only God and his ideas. There is no use of asking all of the other questions." She says, "The maximum of good, do we like to have the maximum of good, or do we like something else? If we say yes, we like the maximum of good, then what?" And she says, "The maximum of good is the infinite God and his idea, the all-in-all, full stop. What else do you want?" she says. "I can't give it to you simpler," she says. "If you want the best of the best, the optimum of good, the maximum of good, then all what you have to take is God and his idea. And that's all in all." And you feel inwardly, I think, the simplicity of her teaching and clarity of her teaching. She says that God and his idea may be to us all inclusive. Well, if we have God and his idea, it includes all. We don't have to worry about anything else. We don't have to think that if we think along the line of God and his idea, that we are up on cloud nine, that we bury our head in the sand, and that we leave out something essential. We don't. We are not going to lose anything, nor do we leave out anything essential. The essential is God and his idea, and that is all inclusive. She says, "There is but one way, namely God and his idea, which leads to spiritual being." We all have an inward leaning and longing for spiritual being, or else we wouldn't be here. Something attracts us to this science because something within us has a spiritual leaning and longing and affection. How to get that spiritual being? She says there is only one way. She doesn't say one of the ways. She's very absolute and said that there is but one way, namely God and his idea, that leads to spiritual being. She says, "The science of being, in which all is divine mind, or God and his idea." All there is, she says, is divine mind, God and his idea. That's all. Well, just these few references on this very point of God and his idea. And you can feel what she is trying to show. She said, "Look here, if you want to know what is the all, if you want to know what is the maximum of good, if you want to know what is eternal, if you want to know what is reality, then you just have to be interested in one thing, namely God and his idea." In her textbook, she likes to vary her renderings because she is speaking to a religiously minded century, to a religiously minded readership, and therefore she uses and likes to use the term God. But then always comes the moment where she feels, "I have to give to that religious connotation the scientific connotation." And so she just varies and uses the same ideas with mind. I come to the next, that all is mind and mind's idea. And I just read again two or three references, just only for the one and only purpose to impress our consciousness with that simple statement. She says, "Christian science reveals incontrovertibly that mind is all in all, that the only realities are the divine mind and idea." Again, what is reality? What is all? Just mind and mind's idea. Or she says, "All that really exists." Again, you have all, reality, existence. All that really exists is what? The divine mind and its idea. Can you see that she never speaks about man and the universe and about all the various things in mortal existence, in human existence, and so on. She just has a great, great overall symbol for all that and says, you know, if you understand mind and mind's idea, you have it. It is all inclusive. It covers every situation because there does not exist anything else but God and His idea, but mind and mind's idea. The one is more religiously written, the other more scientifically written, but meaning the same thing. He says, science says all is mind and mind's idea. You must fight it out on this line. Think of it. If we would fight out everything in our human experience, whatever creeps up, and there is a lot of things creeping up in one's life, if we just would turn away from that whole creeping, crawling things creeping up, just turn away from it and say, what is reality? What is existing? What is good? She says only mind and mind's ideas. So that actually we should only entertain mind and mind's ideas. Or I go to the next subtitle, principle and idea, and I quote from there. And I first quote a few references where she brings out that very thing I was trying to show, that her whole attempt is slowly through the textbook, from chapter to chapter, build up slowly and gently, so that the religious thought is not hurt by it, that the religious thought is wedded to the scientific thought. She builds up and slowly equates God and man with principle and idea. And then afterwards slowly substitutes the term principle and idea for the term God and man. And as I have said before, these quotations are mostly from the last chapters of the textbook. Because at the beginning she just can't come in with the highest scientific statements, or it would shock the reader perhaps too much. So only as she comes towards the end of the textbook, she would do that. She says, in recapitulation, she says, the relations of God and man, comma, divine principle and idea. Can you see how she begins now to equate God and man as the old symbolization, the human symbolization, and puts it into the scientific language and calls it now principle and idea, are indestructible in science. Or she says, in the same chapter, in divine science, God and man are inseparable as what? As divine principle and idea. Can you see that we have to read intelligently that textbook so that the old sense, which we all have taken along with us, the traditional sense, the biblical sense, the religious sense, that we don't park that too much into that science, but that we really follow her thought and says, that she takes and says, look here, God and man is an old kind of expression. What is really meant by it has a higher connotation, has a scientific connotation, namely principle and idea. And take that. And then in the last chapter she says that the human sense of deity yields to the divine sense. You have a gradual working up. First, the human sense of deity yields to the divine sense, even as a material sense of personality yields to the incorporeal sense of God and man. As what? As infinite principle and infinite idea. Here you have that yielding, right at the end of the 16th chapter. Says, you see, a material sense has to yield to an incorporeal sense of deity, a human sense of deity has to yield to a divine sense of deity, and that divine sense of deity is infinite principle and infinite idea. And if we take that, then we take really her revelation as what she has seen it to be science. Therefore, we can understand that big statement which we had taken before, that from the infinite one, in Christian Science comes one principle and its infinite idea. And then to see, that with this infinitude comes spiritual rules, laws, that's what we will have to see, that those ideas are not just amorphous identities, undefined, substantialistic identities of being. but that they are much more than that, that they are structural identities, and therefore these ideas constitute laws and rules and systems and calculus and structure, and that they bring their demonstration. I like that. They begin to work what the idea wants to work out. She says the time has come for us for a better understanding that science gives of the Supreme Being. And what is that Supreme Being? The divine principle and idea. Again, you have that sense that that which is called God or the Supreme Being or the Infinite One or whatever we may call it is actually the divine principle and idea. And that then, as a last one I want to quote, that principle and its idea is one, that they are not two. And this one is God. See that this one, the oneness of God and principle, is God. Here she does not just say principle is God. She says principle and idea is one, and this one is God. Bringing out that we cannot have principle without idea, nor can we have idea without principle. And when we see that unity and oneness, that indestructible unity, we will see something more about idea, namely that an idea is just as big as God, or they wouldn't be one. And this one, she says, is God, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent being, capital B, comma, and his reflection is man and the universe. Only his reflection is man and the universe. Reflection has no substance, you know that. Reflection in the mirror has no substance, does not exist by itself, has no existence by itself. It only borrows everything from the real object before the mirror. But the picture in the mirror, the reflection in the mirror, has no substance whatever. It's not the real thing. Or is the reflection the real thing? Here she shows. I think those last three chapters, you know, they are so deep in its scientific explanation of what she has been trying to build up through the other pages, that it's terrific to think about them.